Welcome to Prairie UU Society. I'm Rev Ralph, he, him. I'm currently serving as your 10th minister. Prairie's buildings are built on ancestral Ho-Chunk land, a place their nation has called Dayjoap. Part of our service is going to be celebrating our indigenous nation's folk. We welcome you. We know you come here for different reasons, to find community, to seek your spiritual and personal truths, to question, to nurture your heart and soul, to be nurtured, to explore new ideas, to find comfort, and perhaps to find answers to some of your bigger questions. We welcome you. We know you come from different places, different religions, different beliefs, and different backgrounds. We hope you will find comfort, connection, challenge, and love here. We hope you will find ways to provide outreach to others in our congregation and in our local community and in our wider world. Our chalice lighting today is The Peace of Autumn by Rabindranath Tagore. He's a poet, Poel Laureate Prize winner in 1913. He was born in 1861 and he died in 1941. Today, the peace of autumn pervades the world. In the radiant noon, silent and motionless, the wide stillness rests like a tired bird, spreading over the deserted fields to all horizons, its wings of golden green. Today, the thin thread of the river flows without song, leaving no mark on its sandy banks. The many distant villages bask in the sun with eyes closed in idle and languid slumber. In the stillness I hear in every blade of grass, in every speck of dust, in every part of my own body, in the visible and invisible worlds, in the planets, the sun, and the stars, the joyous dance of the atoms through endless time. Well, this morning, I'm going to be exploring with you a theme that will touch on two of the sources from which our seven principles draw inspiration and meaning from. Because this morning I'm going to be talking about an event that I attended last August. But these two sources are part of the living tradition that we share and draws from many of the sources. Two of these are the living tradition we share draws from these many sources, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual life, and spiritual teachings from earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. But I begin with this trip that I took this past August 15th down to Chicago. I started out at 4:30 in the morning. I don't usually get up that early. I drove down to Harvard, Illinois, and got the 6 a.m. Metra train, the commuter train that goes into downtown Chicago. I arrived downtown, and then I took a cab over to McCormick Place, and began to attend some of the amazing offerings at this event on this day. The Parliament of World Religions, a call to conscience, defending freedom and human rights. Over 7,000 participants were attending this event from 95 countries, representing 210 religious, spiritual, ethical identities. The 5 days of programs had numerous sessions with speakers from around the globe that addressed issues on global warming, acting for climate, countering war, and hate, violence, uplifting indigenous peoples' rights, empowering women's voices for dignity and equal rights, and assuring that the next generation's voices are heard. Next. Let's go back to 1893. That's when the first Parliament of World Religions was held. And one of its principal organizers was, and who served as the executive secretary of that first Parliament, was the Unitarian minister, Reverend Jenkin Lloyd Jones. He's the Lloyd Jones from Spring Green, Wisconsin. He's buried at the Unity Chapel there, just about 10 miles from where most of us were last Sunday at our retreat at Bethel Horizons. He's the uncle of Frank Lloyd Wright. And he was also one who started the first Unitarian congregation in Madison in the 1890s. The Parliament at that time was just a small part of the World Columbian Exposition, a spectacular World's Fair. Next. There. It was located in Jackson Park on Chicago's south side on the shore of Lake Michigan. It was planned to commemorate the 400th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in North America. The architecture alone, Daniel Burnham's White City, was unlike any other temporary construction. Its neoclassical architecture, arrayed amidst lagoons, fountains, monumental statuary, and acres of buildings. This statue is still at the end of the Midway, right there by Cottage Grove and 60th Street. And some of the designs of these neoclassical buildings still exist as part of the Museum of Science and Industry. That was rebuilt to be permanently there, but it was one of the designed buildings at the World's Fair. And that lagoon right here, that submerged part is now playing fields for the students. It also served for our families where we used to exercise our dog when we lived just a block away from the Midway. The most impressive of these meetings was the World Parliament of Religions, held for 17 days in September 1893. No event of its kind, bringing together thousands of representatives of the great historic religions of the world, had ever been attempted before. So central was religion to the exposition that these words were featured on the grand peristyle at the heart of the complex. It reads like this: tradition in religion is the best fruit of the last four centuries. Well, as a percentage, Christian Protestants dominated the Parliament, both as speakers and as attendees. Yet there was, from the beginning, an intentional effort to include representation from the world's major religions: Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, Zoroastrianism, Shintoism, Confucianism, Taoism, Jainism. There was no, however, representations from the Native American indigenous communities of North America, as these were considered primitive, but they were represented in the anthropology exhibits there. And of course, there was no representation from the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. From the beginning, people who participated or attended the parliament had different and sometimes opposing purposes and expectations. The general committee, which included representatives from different sects and faiths, tried to lay a foundation that promoted an environment of openness and possibility. But there was no existing model of interfaith conversation and cooperation. Here are a few of the objectives the committee stated in 1891. To show men in the most impressive way. Now, men was all that was there. There were no women participating in this. And that was the typical way that you would address a declaration. It was men. And that's, you know, we know about how that represented the patriarchal culture of that time. To show men in the most impressive way what and how many important truths the various religions hold in common. I brought this poster to show how all of these various religions have some form of a golden rule that they believe in. The Parliament was also to promote and deepen the spirit of human brotherhood among religious men of diverse faiths through friendly conference, mutual understanding, while not seeking to foster the temper of indifferentism and not striving to achieve any formal or outward unity. And then to set forth by those most competent to speak what are deemed the important distinctive truths held and taught by each religion and by the various branches of Christendom, and to inquire what light each religion has afforded or may afford to the other religions of the world. By this sense of superiority, there were those who disagreed with that sense of Christianity being the pinnacle of religious progress. One of those who stood out was the Swami Vivekananda, and here he is sitting, and it was Swami Vivekananda who reflected that every religion is only evolving a God out of the material man, and the same God is the inspirer of all of them. Why then are there so many contradictions? The contradictions come from the same truth adapting itself to the different circumstances of different natures. Now, it is said that a world's fair serves at least two purposes. One, they hold a mirror to the present time or condition, showing the state of the world as it is at that time, but often in idealized ways. World's fairs also put forth through exhibits and new technologies and show how future courses of progress might be seen. The World Parliament of Religions did indeed so serve both purposes. It offered a panoramic view of the vast diversity of existing religions and their beliefs and practices. It also laid a groundwork for an emerging ecumenical and eventually pluralistic religious America. On that Tuesday that I attended, there were over 150 different sessions that one could attend. I didn't attend nearly that many. And this is what some of what I saw. In the booths, this is one of the members of the Sikh community. a member of the American Sikh Council. There was a session presented by some of the Sikh elders on the bullying of Sikh children in our schools. Because all Sikhs have to wear a head covering because their hair is never cut. And that's part of their religious tradition. It was also the booth on Zoroastrianism. Well, many of us may have read about Zoroastrian religion in our history of civilization textbooks, but yes, there are still Zoroastrians in our society. Here's what one of the Zoroastrian priests from Canada said. He said there are about 8,000 Zoroastrians in Toronto, Canada, where he lives. He said, we don't give problems to anyone. Nobody gives us problems either. And that's the way I look at it. He described the principles of Zoroastrianism as this. It's one of the world's oldest religions in these three simple terms. We have three words we teach our children, he said. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds. You follow that, you are a saint. And now here is a booth by the Theosophical Society in America. Not only does the society have a vision of union, that we are one another, and a mission of exploration, but also an ethic of putting these high ideals. And they had a handout, and these are two of the beliefs they have. To form a nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color, and to encourage the comparative study of religion, philosophy, and science, and to investigate unexplained laws of nature and the powers of latent humanity. Now, here's one that some of you may have learned about in your history texts, but Swedenborg was a mystic who was expelled from Sweden, emigrated to America, and was very influential to the transcendentalists of our Unitarian tradition. Here, you can't see it, but that's Ralph Waldo Emerson as one of the people who had many conversations about how Swedenborg's ideas would influence his thinking about the universe and ultimate realities. The home of Swedenborg was once right across from Meadville Seminary on 57th Street and Woodlawn when we were living in Hyde Park. We used to walk by that bungalow and there was a sign, Swedenborg Library. Now, our next, we came by the Roman Catholic Franciscan friars representing Roman Catholicism. And the friars have been a part of helping others who are in need and holding up the belief that we are all related to the natural world, especially the world of animals and especially birds. And then there was the American Humanist Association. The motto, I believe in good. They also had handouts that included the 10 commitments, living humanist values, altruism, critical thinking, empathy, environmentalism, ethical development, global awareness, humility, peace and social justice, responsibility, service, and participation. All worthwhile values that we, many of us, hold dear. Buddhism was represented. They had a labyrinth that you could walk, and you could hear the tone of the ringing Buddhist bell, bowl. And that was part of what one could do on that day. And then here is one of the Buddhist monks showing how to ring the Buddhist bowl. And that person wanted to incorporate that sound in her music instrumentation. Well, there were many, many other booths that I saw, but I wanted to close this morning with some of the principles of, and declaration that the Parliament of World's Religions has been developing since 1993, trying to address world's critical ethical crises. It's called Toward a New Global Ethic. This new global ethic is a declaration of the Parliament of World's Religions. Next. No new global order without a new global ethic. We women and men of various religions and regions of earth therefore address all people, religious and non-religious. We wish to express the following convictions which we hold in common. We all have a responsibility for a better global order. Our involvement for the sake of human rights, freedom, justice, peace, and the preservation of the earth is absolutely necessary. Our different religious and cultural traditions must not prevent our common involvement in opposing all forms of inhumanity and working for greater humanness. The principles expressed in this global ethic can be affirmed by all persons with ethical convictions, whether religiously grounded or not. These are irrevocable directives. One, a commitment to a culture of nonviolence and a respect for life. A commitment to a community culture of solidarity and a just economic order. A commitment to a culture of tolerance and a life of truthfulness. A commitment to a culture of equal rights and partnership between men and women. And a commitment to a culture of sustainability and a care for the earth. Without a willingness to take risks and a readiness to sacrifice, there can be no fundamental change in our situation. Therefore, we commit ourselves to a common global ethic, to better mutual understanding, as well as to a socially beneficial, peace-fostering, and earth-friendly ways of life. We invite all men and women, whether religious or not, to do the same. We can all have certain feelings about some of these declarations and commitments. Just yesterday, we were devastated by the news of the attack in Gaza on Israel and the hundreds of people that have been killed in that tragic setting. These represent two world religions, Islam and Judaism, but that does not seem to always hold on the way people relate to one another, especially these nations. I am convinced, however, that there is hope when we have such events like the Parliament of World's Religions. They bring together people who are truly desirous of recognizing and being tolerant of one another, and tolerance is one of our Unitarian principles. So I'm happy to leave you with those ideas and thoughts. Yes, this was my first Parliament of World's Religions. I had learned about it many, many years ago when I lived and attended the University of Chicago, but never was I able to attend one. The last one in Chicago was in 1993. I can't tell you when the next one is, but other locations include Australia, Toronto, Canada, Johannesburg, South America, and there was one in Europe, I think Amsterdam. This is the handbook that they hand that was made available. And over result of a 2-year consultation among more than 200 scholars and theologians representing the world's communities of faith. So they had to work long and hard, especially with that many contributors and thinkers developing that. But it resulted in an outstanding document in my way of reading it. The first question about indigenous folk. The next day, Wednesday, after the day I attended, a whole plenary session was devoted to the indigenous community of the Amazon. And there was a large, large section of discussion from the Interfaith Rainforest Initiative. The Parliament of the World Religions hosted a critical discussion of indigenous peoples, their spiritualities, and the shared moral responsibility across faiths to protect the Amazon and the rights and cultures of indigenous peoples and traditional communities. So it was a part, but it was not on Tuesday, it was on Wednesday, and I didn't attend that day. And then the concern about LGBT rights and concerns. There were at least 4 sessions that one could attend that specifically addressed LGBT concerns. And that was one that I couldn't attend all of everything, but on the more than 500 sessions, those were part of a concern. So it is part of the consciousness of the Parliament. Yeah. I don't know of any of the major world religious leaders that have endorsed this document. I can't find anything that Pope Francis has written or spoken about accepting this. I know that the Muslim leaders in Iran certainly don't recognize this. And the religion of Buddhism is so dispersed and represents so many different sects of Buddhism, there is no one spokesperson. Just as in Islam, there's the Shia and the Sunni, and you don't have one representing all of those branches of Islam. So I think your question is a good one. There are about 500, 5,000 different branches of Christianity just in America. So there is no one voice in America representing the Christian religion. It's just part of the pluralism of the world we live in. And there is a fact that we have to recognize. The growth of religions is declining. France is an example. There are fewer people attending religious services in France than there were 30 years ago. It's also true in the United States. Religious attendance has gone down, especially after the pandemic. So who's representing that voice? It's still up in the air.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you all for sharing this, and I hope it's something that we can ponder. Our closing words, The Sacred Hoop, by Native American Chief Black Elk. Then I was standing on the highest mountain of them all, and round beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell, and I understood more than I saw, for I was seeing in a sacred manner the shapes of all things of the spirit, and the shapes as they must live together like one being. And I saw that the second hoop of my people was one of the many hoops that make one circle, wide as daylight and straight and starlight. And in the center grew one mighty flowering tree to shelter all the children of one mother and one father. And I saw that it was holy.